actually quite a challenge to be up on stage here because it's still super hot. And another challenge to be on stage after the master of presentations, Niels, and I'm not sure I'm gonna be able to keep up with his energy on stage, but I'll do my very best. So I'm here to talk, like you just said, I'll talk about the Tactical Technology Collective. And the idea of my talk is just to give a general overview of what we do in our Privacy and Expression program, to present the different projects that we have, hoping to generate interest, not only to use them, which we do very much, but also, and that's the main goal of my presentation today, is somebody's asking to take a picture, and I'm hope everybody is okay with having their back of their heads on the pictures. What I was going to say, what we would like to talk about, what I would like to talk about, my colleagues are here as well, is with people who would actually like to contribute to working with digital security, hackers and nerds and developers who have capacity and would like to help with what we need to build for the needs of the users that were also just presented in the talk before, because there is a huge need. I don't know how many of you are following debates about how digital security can be generated for users that are maybe sometimes happening on the Liberation Tech mailing list, but also in many, many other places. And often we have the feeling that users who have certain needs, or we as a project or as an NGO that works with users and try to train digital security, we can see those needs, but it's not so easy to find people who want to help in actually working on what is necessary. And that's what we want to talk about in the second half of my presentation. The Tactical Technology Collective is an NGO that was founded 10 years ago with the aim originally and still to help activists, human rights defenders, communities at risk, independent journalists to use technology for the cause that they have, for the things they want to do. That was the original goal. And the Privacy Expression Program developed out of that. In the beginning, it was generally trying to promote open source software among activists and in helping them to get away from proprietary software and telling them you don't need to be on Windows, you don't need to be using Photoshop. There is also GIMP. There is much, like I'm sure many of you are aware of these kinds of discussions, trying to convince people to say there's good alternatives and they're actually better. And that was the original starting point of Tactical Tech. And after a while, it was found out that there is actually, specifically in the area of security, there is a huge need in teaching open source software and helping people to find the right software that they have. And the Privacy and Expression program that developed out of that at the moment has three main goals. One of them is awareness raising, actually getting activists, human rights defenders to understand that there is a risk if they don't already know, and to create that awareness that where the areas are that they need to be doing something, and from there to move on to help them to generate behavior change. And that is a huge big question that I think also probably many of you have been thinking about, how when people understand that Facebook is not such a good idea, how do you actually get people to change what they want to do? And that is a huge, big, huge, big topic. And we have a specific program for that. And out of that, then the starting point actually was security in a box, which is mainly capacity building. Also, I want to mention we have some of the materials that we produce back there on the table. So if you want to leave early or in the end of the talk, you want to pick up some of the stuff that we do, you're free to take what's on that table over there. The awareness raising program is called Me and My Shadow. And Me and My Shadow is a website that tries to teach about the digital shadows that we leave when we are online, the digital traces that we leave. I think most people who use the internet in one way or another today understand that we do leave traces, that we can be tracked in some way or another, but very, very many people, I think most people, actually I think all people, really all people don't really understand how that happens, what the traces are that we leave when we have an iPhone, when we have a laptop, when we use credit cards to buy something online. The first step is maybe somewhat easy, but then to understand how tracking works in your browser and how that information is put together by and by whom and with what interest and what the consequences are already is more difficult. Now I need something to drink. It's really hot. And so the My Shadow website starts out with a part that is called Trace Your Shadow. And in that, we offer an interactive visualization where you can pick actually the things that you do online, whether you use a laptop at home or at work, and what kind of operating system you do. You can kind of tick off these different options, what kind of phone you use, and whether you use Google services or not, or whether you buy stuff online or not. So you tick on these different options, and then you get shown what the traces are that you leave. And later on, you find things like details that some of the users have maybe heard of. Something here is mentioned a lot. MAC addresses. Do Fox IT trace our MAC addresses all here, or do they not? And is a MAC address something that has to do with a MAC computer, or is that something different? So we try to explain what that actually is. And we also try to explain what you can do about it, and which are the things that you can do something about. And some of them are quite easy, and some of them are almost impossible to change. And we also want everyone to understand which are the things that you can change. That often it's not enough to just change a username or use a different Facebook account, because still you can be traced, and in which way. So that's the My Shadow website. And actually, yeah, you can see, I don't know, can you see that? The address is myshadow.org, so you can maybe have a look at that later and try out what the traces are that you leave and whether you feel comfortable with all of them. Another section of that website is called the Shadow Tracers Kit, and it's kind of a collection of the different tools that you can use to avoid tracking. Could someone get me some water, because if I keep drinking mate, my throat keeps scratching even worse and I can't speak really. So in there, we try to compile different kinds of tools. Many of them are browser add-ons. And we try to give a bit of information what the add-ons are that you should be using to avoid leaving traces, like NoScript, like ad blockers. Many of them are open source, and many of them are not. And we still advise them, but we give that information. For example, something that many people don't know is that the very popular add-on Ghostery, which really helps you get rid of many ads, is actually owned by an ad-selling company, by Evidon. And still, it's being promoted a lot. And I think it's a good debate to have whether you should be promoting something like Ghostery, which is super helpful and also helps you understand who tracks you and in which way. But at the same time, you don't really know what the company does. And this is the kind of... great. Thank you so much. And the idea is to give as much of this kind of information as possible, and then leave it up to the users to make their choices what actually they're fine with, because I think we all have different realities, we all have different needs. Some of us have good reason to really not want to be tracked by the ad selling companies, and others are just totally in need to use Amazon and cannot avoid that. No, let's stay with my shadow for just another moment. There's two more sections in there that I want to quickly mention. One is called the EULA section, which is the end user license agreements. And we feel it's also important. I think it seems that most of us are aware that we agree to a lot of things when we click on the I agree, when we sign on to a new service, when we download a new app, but whoever it is, like, how many people here actually read end user license agreements? Like, to the end? That is actually fantastic. I mean, there's three people in the room who do read end user license agreements, and that's really, I don't often. I mean, I sometimes have to when I build the My Shadow website, I do. And sometimes later I do. But if I need a specific service because I want to use public transportation in the Netherlands and I just quickly need to find out where the train goes, no, no, that's the app, I don't. And we try to give this information and we have done some visualizations on the most popular services and applications where you can look at the Google or the Facebook licenses and visualize actually what you agree to. Like, there's so much gibberish in there. We don't save your personal information unless we really have to. And in the visualization, in fact, what you see is we save your personal information. Because the unless you really have to really is bullshit after all, because they do save the information. And we want to give away, we want to make people understand what actually they agree to. Personally, for example, I at some point when I heard many people talk about a new communication software called WhatsApp, and many people talked about it, and I thought, well, at least I know it's bad. I know there's a lot of security implications, but it's also my job to know about what's going on and what people are using. So I want to look at that. So I downloaded that. And I think already in the first paragraph, it asked to have access to all of my mobile's contacts details. Like everything. Like everybody who's in your phone book's contacts, they want their whatever you have in there. Addresses, email addresses, telephone numbers. And I didn't accept, so until now I don't know really what WhatsApp looks like because I thought that is really bad. But often you this kind of information is way in the end and you don't have it. And so that's a section that we have in My Shadow. And the last section that we have is a new section. It's called the Shadow Times, and it tries to compile important information. Sorry. Important pieces of news. Like, for example, recently there's a lot, of course, on PRISM and the NSA leaks and many, many details. For people that are interested generally in privacy and discussions about privacy and security, that they can follow in that section. What we also do to raise awareness is what we call flash events. We could even call our presence at OM maybe something like a flash event. We go to big events where there's many people who somehow work with the digital technologies, and we do tables with information. We try to raise awareness about things. We have little cards that we hand out that just basically ask some questions. For example, one of them is, do you feel more comfortable with Google Mail or with Yahoo? And then people get the option of saying, yeah, well, yes, I use Google or I use Yahoo, or because that's what most people use. Or I don't know, or actually I think that's the card right here. And there used to be a difference. Actually, that's changed when we made that card. There was an answer to that question that we gave, and many of the security community don't agree with already making that decision as a decision of what's safer, because they're both really bad concerning security. But Gmail offered for a long time and still does HTTPS connections, and Yahoo Mail didn't. So for many activists, given the choice of which of the two, then we said, if for some reason you want to make that decision, then of course it's better to take Gmail because you have the HTTPS option, and that gave us also the opportunity to explain about HTTPS and why it's important to look out for that and to make sure that that is activated if you have to use webmail. These are the options. There is some clips about this that we produce that have are part of the second program, which is Ono the Robot. And Ono the Robot is a figure that has to do and was created as part of the idea that to create awareness and to actually make people want to change behavior regarding digital security, there's often either someone who can't speak because of their throat. There's two approaches in people who know and who want to help other people. One is to scare and to describe all the threats that are out there and to describe how very dangerous it can be once you go online, specifically for political activists or for human rights defenders. And it was our experience that that is easy to do. It's easy to come up with lots of examples what the evil things that can happen to you if you don't use Tor, if you don't use email encryption, if you do use Facebook. And we all know that facial expression of people who are saying, like, yes, I know. I mean, I don't really, but I have an idea, but I feel really bad about this. Sometimes not daring to ask questions, sometimes daring to ask questions, but feeling bad. So that's one option. And the other option is to actually make behavior change attractive. And I think, I don't know about you, but for me, and I think for most people, when we want to try out something with a computer, if we do change, if we adapt to a new software, if we use a new platform, that is because, not because we understand it's necessary. Sometimes it's like that. I think programmers might be a bit different sometimes, but that is because it's nice, because it's fun, because we want to try out, because it's interesting and it has this, I want to do that now, kind of feeling. And Ono the robot was created to kind of replace the kitten moment in having the internet be attractive. Ono the robot is this cute little figure that explains about digital security and is something that helps you also understand about some of the dangers. And Ono the robot lives through video episodes and little clips, and one of them is this. I hope that works. So that's one of, I think we have 10 of them, I'm not quite sure, 8 to 10 of these clips. In the beginning, we made longer episodes that gave more of an explanation, and we felt that that didn't really quite work so well. People, you can see that people started watching them, but kind of went away after a while, and people who do video know that you need to make short clips to keep people on track. So that was later changed into shorter of these clips. And there's a whole bunch of them, and we actually encourage people to help translating them because, as Hadi said earlier, and Niels also in the presentation before, we work with many communities in many different countries, and one thing that really doesn't work is if you try to learn something in a language that you're not really familiar with. So it's really important to have this information in many languages, and so we called for volunteers to help with an online service which is called DotSub to do translations. And many of the clips now, and you can see that on the onorobot.org website, have translations in very many languages. Another thing that Ono is also part of, or that we try to encourage people to do, is the Ono parties, where we encourage people to download all the material. Everything that Tactical Tech does is open source, so you can download whatever you find interesting and useful to you, and use it and remix it and keep working with it. And the same is true for all the videos. So we encourage people to get together with friends, communities, with their organization, with the group that they work with the activist community that they work with, and just have an evening of digital security, have an Ono party, and watch some of the films and maybe talk about it. And they're all short clips that address one specific issue, for example, password security or HTTPS, like this one and many others, that are very low level in a way, so that you don't need any prior big knowledge, but it really tries to talk to people at where they're actually at in their daily use of the internet. And activists and human rights defenders, or independent journalists, and that was mentioned before also, they have a cause, they have something they want to do, so they want to achieve that, so that's what they want to work on. They often understand that digital security is something that's important, but they have something more important to do. That is, so to say, the emotional being that they have. And I think many of us probably are similar to that, and that we also like have different causes where we think, this is what I think about when I get up in the morning and when I have lunch with friends, and in the afternoon I find this really interesting article and I need to post that, and that's going to be such an awful picture. And so it's really important to not threaten people in, yeah, you now need to spend all your time with this, but to make it attractive to spend a little bit of time with digital security and improving what you do already, to stop using the same password for all the services that you do and change that into being different ones is not perfect. And of course it would be nicer if you used KeePass and really good ones, and also that is not going to create perfect security, but every little step that people can integrate into their daily activist life is already an improvement. So that's our approach for that. And this is kind of, some people call it the flagship of Tactical Tax Security Program, Security in a Box. And Security in a Box is a toolkit of different software that is used in the trainings a lot, but that can also be used for people individually or for groups that don't have capacity or time for a training through anyone. And it is a collection of software that addresses Windows users. And it addresses Windows users primarily because that is what most people use. There is a website, it's called Security in a Box, the digital platform, and that has both hands-on guides for the use of different kinds of file security, wiping your disk for creating safe passwords, but also for using social networking platforms and many others. And it gives some context in a chapter that tries to describe in what kind of situations this matters and what people need to look out for, and what many different aspects of doing file security or encryption or removal of files, why that matters and for which people and what they need to think about when they want to do this. But it also has this hands-on guide, which is not in the book that also exists, which you can look at over there on the table. But the hands-on guides that are online give detailed walkthroughs with many screenshots in trying to help people to install something by themselves. This also relates to something that Niels said earlier. Often, if you're familiar with a piece of software, it seems not difficult to install because you know what you need to look out for. And I think a good example might be installing GPG. If you've used GPG, for example, with Thunderbird and Enigmail for a long time, or if you've used GPG even before Thunderbird had Enigmail or before Thunderbird existed, the situation that we have now is fantastic. It's so easy to install, and you only need to click encrypt and you can use it. And personally, I find that a huge advancement to what we had before. But also I know that if you're not familiar with that, and if you're not familiar with the many details, there are so many things that can happen where you are given a choice and you just don't know what the right choice is to make, whether you need to click yes or no here or there. And then you get lost, and then you either feel totally disempowered and don't want to go on and would like to go back to your really important land grabbing issue that you've been working on for such a long time, and you stop, or you try but you somehow get lost and feel failed. So it's really important to give really step by step all the different options a walkthrough of for people, and that's what we try to do with Security in a Box. And not only in one language, but I think now we have 12 languages on the website, and we're currently working on more. And the book is currently in 6 languages, which is not perfect, but we're working on getting more, because again, if you don't have it in your own language, it's really, really difficult to feel comfortable with it. Specifically, of course, also if your own software or your operating system is set in one language and then you try to understand to install something in another, that hardly ever works. There's also a DVD that we hand out at trainings that doesn't include the software, but links to where you can actually get the software, because one of the big challenges of doing Security in a Box is that everything changes all the time. There are so many updates and there are so many screenshots that need to be changed. And to get that out in the different translations actually is like when you look at that, you feel it's actually not okay to do a book with that, because already when it's printed, it's out of date. And already 1 month later, it's really out of date, so it's not responsible to hand it out. But on the other hand, there's so many people who don't have good broadband access and who are very happy to have the book. And we get very much feedback by people saying, I've used that book so much and it's so good to have because I just don't have a good computer, or I don't have a good computer at home. And it was really good to have that, to read through the chapters and to understand the context. So we do that knowing it's not perfect. We had that none of if ever you work with digital security, it's never perfect. Security is not perfect. It can't be perfect. It's not perfect for anyone, and you will never reach something that you will call a good state of being with regards to digital security. So again, we try to have this approach. The more we can achieve, and the more people are willing to adapt and to change the behavior, the better that is for the activist causes that they have. Oops. And with the trainings that we do in many, many countries, there's a large community that has built over the years, because people, when they do trainings with tactical tech, and we have trainers in many countries that either directly work with tactical tech or that cooperate with us, and the other organization that together with us does the Security in a Box, which is Frontline Defenders, they of course get contacted beforehand to try to understand exactly what their needs are and what are, because again, it makes no sense to just come with a tool set and say, okay, what you need is email encryption and you need password security and you need to be able to wipe your computer, because if you then understand that people don't have their own computer and they don't have a way of actually installing an email client, then you might need to talk about something completely different. And it's important to find that out beforehand to create the best possible training for the people that you actually work with. And it's important to understand also what they are afraid of and what their threat model really is, because that can be so totally different. For some people, it's really important to be anonymous, and for some people, it can be quite the contrary. It can be very important to not be anonymous, because it might actually be helpful for them to have public attention that gives them the security that they need. If you have any questions in between, feel free. Understanding questions we really want to discuss later about the details, feel free to ask. Hadi mentioned also before that through trying to work with open source software, through going to a behavior change campaign and actually looking at people's needs before we start teaching them something, we have developed a new project which we call Behavior in Context, Security in Context, I'm sorry, which tries to look at specific communities and their specific needs, because again, the more people feel at home actually in already the threat model or the context that is given for why certain pieces of security are necessary, the more they're probably ready to adapt behavior changes. And the one project that we're currently working on is specifically for LGBTI communities in the Middle East. Also because, of course, with the Arab Spring and all the different conflicts that are happening in that region, it's quite obvious that that is a community that clearly is at risk and needs help with digital security. And so we try to, with the Security in a Box project that has these different tools that we offer to teach, try to give a little bit of context of why especially these can be useful. For example, if you work with LGBT communities, other than maybe other communities, for example, getting out and in contact with other LGBT activists or maybe not even activists, often happens, or there is an interest in dating sites, which is something that we don't normally include into our digital security training, but that is something that specifically matters for that community. And there is actually quite a challenge, because dating sites often are more rewarding the more information you give. This is not just for LGBT dating sites, but any kind of dating sites. And the more you say about yourself, the more information you give, where you live, what you like, what you look like, what age you have, the better the matches are that you get. But that, of course, can be also quite a risk if you give so much information. And so we try to address specifically this kind of issue in that chapter and many similar things. And that's just one security and context project that we have that we're working on at the moment. The next one that we are going to do is for women human rights defenders who face different kinds of threats and who actually face a specific challenge with regards to digital security. Because generally, I think when you talk about security in environments like here, there is a general understanding that, of course, we want perfect anonymity. That anonymity is something, and the use of pseudonyms is something that we want and that we lobby for and that we think is really important, even though there is the whole child pornography issue. But for women human rights defenders and feminist activists, anonymity can be a problem, because stalkers can be a huge problem. Misogynist violence is a huge problem online, and that is actually different to solve if you have anonymity online. And so that is a challenge that is actually difficult to address, and that's something that we try to look at, because I think it makes no sense to just shy away from that problem and to not address it when you talk at issues like that. When talking about security in context, another thing that we are recently trying to include into the things that we do is what we call holistic security. And that means we're not only looking at digital security, but we're also looking at physical security and at emotional security, or what we call psychosocial security. Because if someone is so stressed out with whatever situation that they can't really take care of themselves, and that they can't really even get themselves together to make sure that they are using the mail encryption in a proper way, then there is no security in that. So it's really important in trainings to not just teach tools, but to actually try to get all of these things together. Physical security and digital security often are very closely related. I mean, already my laptop, is that digital or is that physical? That is hardware. The way I store my passwords, depending on what you're actually scared of. If you're really scared of digital surveillance and keyloggers, then it might not be such a bad idea to have your master password on a piece of paper if you live in a place where you're totally sure that nobody is going to invade that. I think there's very few situations in which you can be very sure of that, but it's always something that you need to look at. And if you teach an NGO somewhere how to encrypt their contact database of the people they work with, that can increase the security of that NGO, of course, very much. But if the result of that is that actually they have much more detailed information about the people that they work with in that database, and then they have the password on a piece of paper on the wall, and then their office gets raided, then of course there is no security at all. And that is an overlap of digital and of physical security. And so we try to include that in the trainings also, and we're working on designing schedules and curricula for the trainings that include all three of these, because in a way, if you have a training that lasts for 2 or 3 or 4, or maybe 5 days a week, already you don't manage to address all the digital security issues that matter. But it's important to still look also at these other aspects, because there just is no point if you only look at one aspect and you forget the other two. Right. What time is it? I don't have a watch here. It's 1:45. Okay, then I actually should get finished, because I'll stop here. I think I talked enough. So I would love to hear if you have any questions or comments on that. And what we would specifically be interested in is to find people or to start building a network or a community of developers who actually want to contribute to what we do. Because there is so much software that actually doesn't exist. One of the reasons why we have non-open source software and security in a box is because some of that doesn't exist as open source. It still needs to develop, but there is no space where actually these kinds of things can get discussed. I mean, there's developer communities who do great stuff for certain issues, and already I know capacities are limited, and it's actually not easy for people like us to like do a loud call saying, you know, you really now we need people to improve Jitsi so people can actually use it. But in fact, that is a wide open space. By now, I think with Prism, everyone has understood finally that Skype really is not an option. But then what should we tell people to use? There is Jitsi. Jitsi doesn't work. I mean, yes, it does. But if you want to do a conference call with Jitsi, you have a problem. It just is no correct alternative. So there's many of these things. And the software that specifically is addressing Windows users, there's several things that are needed. And so we would love to start talking about how we can talk about these things and how we can find people who would like to help with this kind of thing. And that is a question I have to you, and I wonder if anyone has ideas or interest. Thanks.
Hello. So one idea is, so we run like a tech innovation prize. It's going to be $50,000 to new projects or existing projects that are filling gaps that people find within this space. And so it'd be great to kind of, and obviously like the Jitsi gap or whatever is like well known, but it'd be great to kind of have like a list of like where the gaps are, what are the most critical, like time sensitive critical, or you know, what's the biggest gap in security in a box, et cetera, that you can find? Because, like, for instance, it was, like, with great fanfare that, like, I saw the new, like, UI UX redesign of Tor that hopefully has been pushed out, or at least is an alpha. And so that's, like, a huge step in the right direction for the Tor browser bundle. But, yeah, there are these specific, like, gaps, and it would be great to kind of have a large list of those that you could help provide.
I totally agree. Yeah. You want to maybe come here, Hadi, and because I'm sure you have something to say here now.
It's okay here. Just following up on that. So tomorrow, what we are planning to do is to map those gaps, tool-wise or materials-wise. So like we know what we can work on, what we want to prioritize. That's all. It's tomorrow from 4 to 6 in Noisy Square number 2.
Yeah, so for everyone who wasn't here before, when that was presented, it's a workshop that is done by us, by Tactical Tech, that really like wants to go into those details.
Just to know, how do you measure like the results of your projects and or your initiatives? Like, for example, the security in a box or the Honor robot. Like, do you have any way to measure like if it's really working? If really some people like got affected and changed their behaviors, or people that was at risk and got like in a safer state after?
We don't have a way to measure that. Of course, what we can measure is how many people we train. We do ask for feedback. We are in touch with people through mailing lists afterwards, and so we don't measure it, but we do get feedback, which is often positive, and often, of course, also it's not. I mean, let's be realistic. If you train people for a short while, there's going to be so many who afterwards really want to stick with it, but then don't find the time, and that happens. But we also, what we can measure is, of course, access to the website, which is enormous, and specifically after PRISM, also there was like this huge jump of people who were looking at that and who were downloading things, probably, which we can't measure because we don't have the software ourselves. So we get a lot of feedback in different channels, but we cannot actually measure how behavior change works. What we can measure is how many people we can reach, and we get an impression through feedback.
What are your plans for the future? Are you going to do you want to grow as an organization and do more training, then hire more people? Do you want to have people run tactical tech like Thingies in other countries or areas, or you know?
Yes to all of those. there is clearly a need for more of this because, well, everybody understands that this kind of security training is important. There's actually not that many people doing it, and the demand for trainings is much greater than we can meet. And that's one of the reasons why we encourage everyone to download as much of this as possible and to take it. And if there was more groups who started doing trainings with this or improving the material or giving feedback or downloading and doing trainings, that would be fantastic. So yes to growing, yes to other people using it. And what when it comes to plans, is what we want to improve is the whole process of updating security in a box, which is in great need because it kind of like started like this. Let's throw together the software that you need. And it, at the moment, we're at a stage where we're working with so many languages and so much software and with a print version and a digital version and the DVD, and already to get that coherent is a lot of work. and also for example, what we would like to get to at some point in the future, what we don't at the moment, is to allow updates in different languages to happen. At the moment, we have the core language English. We work with that, we update that, and then it gets translated to all the other languages. But it would be really nice to have a non-hierarchical, so to say, a system of languages where anyone who works with any of the languages, the translators, the trainers, can also say, I heard about this bug, I heard about this security problem, and so that's why we need to change the way that is defined. And that's something that we're trying to get to. I don't know if you were here before when Hadi explained that we also try to systematize the trainings more in a way that they can be done by other people, so that we actually get curriculums online with examples, with metaphors, with methodology that people can use in trainings.
Other questions? No? I have a question. Do you have a platform where people can join, where you can like post projects or things you would like done, and people can stay up to date and see if there's anything they can contribute to?
No, we don't at the moment, and that was what I was hoping for, or that we're aiming at creating and trying to understand how that platform would make sense. How that can be designed in a way that it actually works, because again, going out and saying we demand now that this or that software gets fixed doesn't work. And to just like go to the developer communities that, of course, we are already close with, that work on stuff, and to say, but what we really need now, could you please help us with finally designing something that is open source and recovers files in Windows or something like that, is something that I don't do because I feel bad, because I know everybody is already working pro bono and doesn't sleep, etc., etc. So it would be really nice to find a way of communication that doesn't put pressure on anyone, but still enables this kind of communication, because it is this gap. And yeah, any ideas welcome.
Well, we have, because I work for Bits of Freedom, and we had the same problem. Lots of volunteers were wanting to do stuff, but we didn't have stuff for them to do, or the other way around. And then we made this platform where people could just join and say, well, these are my skills, and this is the amount of time I can help. And we just post projects, and other people can post projects as well. And they say, well, this is my idea, and I need a programmer, and I need somebody who can write, somebody who can translate. And then people can subscribe to these projects and just go ahead. And it's, well, we're still finding out if it works, but it seems to work quite well. So maybe that's an idea. So just
and,
have
and that is in what language?
Dutch. But the code is open source. So if you're interested, you can...
That sounds... one option is to take the code and make our own, or actually to start by using that and having multilingual. And because in a way, I don't think we should have one platform per language, but rather one platform.
Other questions?
Quick comment on that. It is community work, and community work is a lot of work. You have to go reach out to people. Yeah, it's not only like a piece of software and a database online. It's more than that.
And do you have ideas how that reaching out could be done in a meaningful, useful way?
Well, for example, it's like, so you have all these prominent figures like Assange, Jacob Applebaum, this opening talk of home was like, go make good crypto tools. Having some guidance on that, pushing that to those people and prominent figures would be definitely helpful.
Yeah, that's true. Any other questions or comments on what I said?
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.